Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
It's Willie and D-Mace here on a Tuesday morning, Nashville, Tennessee. Willie Donick and Derek Mason, along with Nick Frazier, for another fun show as we move through the Everybody's Undefeated season of preseason football. All college teams, no losses. All NFL teams, no losses. Optimism, hope, springs eternal.
How are they doing? How are they going to do? Because nobody has a loss yet. So how are they going to do the playoff right now?
If the season ended today, we can't really give you matchups because we have no tiebreakers. We have nobody lost. Everybody's got the same record.
Alphabetical order?
It may be.
So you have to kind of go off of it.
Well, we'll see the likes of Albany State in it. Alcorn State.
The Commodores are still in it.
Yeah.
The Commodores are still in it. Yeah. I almost asked J.C. Latham. I was at Titans practice on Saturday, and he was answering questions on important things. Mm-hmm. But I could not help but remember when he told Chase and Big Joe that he took Vanderbilt to back-to-back national titles in the video game. I wanted to ask him if he went for a three-peat or, you know, if he maybe has relayed some of his secrets to the coaching staff to try to help them through.
But if he had back-to-back national championships, he left. He's at another college now.
I do think he would have used that as a stepping stone.
Exactly.
You're right.
He's gone.
He may be gone. You know, it's unique, an opportunity to go for a three-peat. So maybe he went for a three-peat first.
He probably got it. The first team ever to do a three-peat. Vanderbilt Commodores.
He was the first time to do a repeat.
So it had to have been the 2024, 2025, and 2026. They three-peated.
Yeah.
According to J.C. Latham. But I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. Wow. That would be – I think – the things when you start to look at things and you say, what are the things that are most likely never to happen? You put them in their own category. That would be one that would probably be number one.
Three
never to happen. Yes, Vanderbilt.
Three never
to happen. We're talking football.
Yeah,
I don't think it ever happened.
Three-peat in college sports anywhere is increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I think it's a great philosophical question, and that is, what is college sports going to look like in 5 years or 10 years compared to everything that we had growing up? It's evolved, but the radical change that has just happened in the last couple of years, I don't think we even really know what ripple effect it's going to have in a few years as the NCAA still tries to figure out exactly what they can do, what they – We know they've been hamstrung.
They can't do anything.
No.
The NCAA.
But they still exist, right? Yeah. We still call it NCAA sports. They're there.
The NCAA.
Somebody works in that office over there.
The NCAA is like that secret club that is there, but you don't know if they there. You don't know what they do.
Like when you call the office, somebody picks up the phone.
Exactly.
Right?
And you see somebody, you say, oh, okay. Where do you work? What do you do? I work for the NCAA. Well, what do you do?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
What building? That building. That just plain white building? Yeah. That building next to the building. That's where we work. It's like, okay. So what you're saying is you really do nothing. You know, the NCAA remind me of Tommy. Anybody that watched Martin, you know the Tommy reference. Tommy had a job but really didn't have a job. Nobody knew what Tommy did, but Tommy always had money. Tommy's always had everything. That's the NCAA. It's like, what do y'all do? They don't even know what they do.
It's a great question because, you know, their world has been turned upside down.
Oh, absolutely.
With all this
stuff. No fault of their own.
And yet, they still have to be part of the equation. Like, even Greg Sankey said it in his address for the SEC media days.
He was just playing nice, I think.
Well, he's playing nice, but everybody still chooses to play in the NCAA. We haven't had anybody say, all right, let's take these 50 schools or 40 schools, uh-huh. whatever the number is, and let's just say this is the ante up to be in this new thing mm-hmm. that's not the NCAA, and this is the new college sports.
That's coming. That's coming.
Well, that's why I asked the question. In five years or 10 years, is that what we're going to see?
I think
we're moving in that direction, right?
10 years, the minute Florida State is able to get out of this, you know, dilemma they're in, I think that's when, because right now they can't completely do it because they still have, it's like, we want this team, we want this team, so we can't completely separate from it, even though they could, but they're waiting till they get the teams that they exactly want, the Florida States, the University of Miami, the Clemsons, Notre Dame, teams like that that are willing to come in the Big Ten or the SEC or the Big 12. Because these other conferences are going to be gone. A lot of these other conferences are going to be gone. Or they're just going to have their own little deal. And then the NCAA is going to – they're still going to exist, but I think for probably lower sports.
This is why I asked. Like, is it going to be the NCAA? Mm-hmm. Because then that person still working in the office – what's his name, Tommy?
Yeah, Tommy.
Tommy's still going to be in the office. If you call Tommy, he's going to say, NCAA, this is Tommy.
Like, what do y'all do?
I'm not sure what we do, but we're here. Like,
we're getting paid.
Alabama and Florida and Oklahoma and Ohio State, they're still in there. They're under the umbrella. I'm not sure what we're doing, but they're still in the NCAA. We still exist. I wonder if it will be that or it's going to be called something different. This is the college – professional league, which is kind of what it already is.
I don't think
going.
We can, because we would have never thought that college football or college sports, let's just say college sports, would be where it is now. Like the rule changes, the conference realignments, the money that is coming in from networks to these universities or these conferences. We never thought that it would get that big, let alone having kids making money off their own name, image, and likeness. That was like so far in front of us, we couldn't see it. And then all of a sudden, in the early 90s, you have the O'Bannon brothers that end up suing the NCAA. And the NCAA, in all of their arrogance, still didn't do anything about it. And they had an opportunity to do something about it then.
Someday... there's already been plenty of books written uh-huh. on what they could have done. Somebody will probably make a great movie someday, or maybe it's not a great movie that wins an Oscar, but if somebody does a good movie and does it right, mm-hmm. the missteps of the NCAA could be documented in something would be really fascinating to watch. Maybe it's just a straight-up documentary, but maybe it's a docudrama
uh-huh.
where Tommy's in there and he's like, guys, you got to get with this, man. We're gonna be a shell of our former selves if we don't get with the program. We got to get with this NIL.
Yeah.
And somebody upstairs is gonna be like, Tommy, come on, man, we're all right. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry.
We're fine.
About it. We're good.
Don't worry. We got lawyers. It's okay. We're gonna win. Just keep sending the guy out there and then talking about amateurism and the Olympics. Mm-hmm.
And then 10 years later, Tommy comes back to the office. I told you.
Tommy's gonna say, I told you guys. I told you.
Oh, man. Right now, the U.S. is up in volleyball 2-0 against Poland. But Poland is actually winning this set. The U.S. is up 2-0 as far as sets, but Poland is up in this particular set right now.
We watch the volleyball on the sand where it's amazing how high they jump and stuff on the sand. But then you see it in the indoor, the 5-on-5 or 6-on-6, whatever it is. My goodness. Whether it's guys or girls, the vertical jumps and the precision of all that they do to try to avoid the blockers on the other side, they tip it back or they have the quick set or the way up high set, the two guys coming in from the side. It's amazing to watch.
It's funny.
It's amazing.
Because they throw the ball up and then you had that one guy faking like he's going to hit the ball. And then you have somebody else that spikes the ball.
Yep. And then sometimes it's just like, I don't care if you have three people blocking it. I'm just going to smash this right through your arm.
Man, but I enjoy sand volleyball more. And I told y'all why. It's like, because it's like, they just showed up like, hey, somebody want to play?
Yeah.
They had a sock, I mean, not a soccer ball, but they had a volleyball. Hey, anybody want to play?
Yeah. And okay, we talked about Tommy in the NCAA office. I wonder who the person is in beach volleyball and said, you know what? This could be a league. Uh-huh. This could be an Olympic sport. Let's see who the best is. Because you're right. It probably just started off on, hey, we could play volleyball out
let's
here on the beach.
Here. Exactly. And then afterwards,
how about, two on two volleyball. Like, who decided that that's the real one?
Because
I would have been like, no, I want five people over here. Yeah. I'm not running all over the place. I'm not doing that.
Why?
But somebody decided, no, two on two, that's how we're going to find out who the best player
are. Which is a crazy question to ask in itself, because I think I'm going to say it out loud, but I think I know the answer anyway. Are the indoor and the outdoor, they're the same length as far as court-wise? Like,
I don't believe so.
They're not?
I don't believe
so. The volleyball, the like outside sand volleyball, looks a little smaller.
Okay.
Is that right?
I think so. Outside might be a little bit smaller.
It's got to be, because there's too much space to cover.
See, I'm just looking at from pail to pail. You see how it is?
Yeah.
Or you can call it.
It's not drastically different, I don't think.
No, I don't think it's drastically different. Yeah. It may be some, you know, it may not be as wide, or it's sort of like the equivalent of, I would say, the NFL than the Arena League. The NFL has their long field, but the Arena League condenses everything.
That's another thing that whoever this inventor was had to come up with. All right, we're going to make the court a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
We're going to play on the sand. But that person's got to be living large right now, of course. Whoever that person was who converted it, because the crowds and the excitement for the beach volleyball for the Olympics is unreal.
Man. I love it.
I watched it all day yesterday.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't get enough.
That's awesome.
There's a bit of a difference. Yeah. The beach volleyball is 52.5 feet by 26.2 feet, and indoor is 59 feet by 29.5. So
it is smaller.
Yeah.
But rightfully so, it's only two people. I mean, you know, two on each side, so rightfully so. But so anybody watch the Olympics? What was the favorite of yesterday, the Olympics? And listen, people, we are a sports show. So if you do not want to know the results, please close your ears just for like 5, 10 seconds when you know we're about to say what the results was. Because, again, this is a sports show. And we know sometimes, you know, people are at work and they hadn't seen it yet, so they tape it. But we got to give you the update.
Yeah,
so.
The prime time happens, I feel like, from about the time we're on our show to about maybe an hour, hour and a half after our show ends. That's when the live stuff is coming to us. The track and field has captured my attention.
No, you know what that had me? It gave me chill bumps. I'm sorry, Willie. The pole vaulting.
Did y'all see that guy?
Yes.
Oh, that's my. Too bad Caroline's not on the show anymore. She got her new gig. But the guy from Sweden, he grew up in Louisiana.
Okay.
But his mom is Swedish, so he competed for Sweden. I don't know really the full story behind that, but he went to LSU. His dad's kind of the coach, so he's really he is. Yeah, I guess if you have that situation, you can compete for either country.
Exactly, yeah.
But he had that crowd in the palm of his hand and he set the world record for the pole vault. I've never watched so much pole vaulting one day in my life, but I got sucked in. He got the big pole out. He already had the gold. He had three chances to break the record, right?
Yeah.
And he gets the crowd going. He starts clapping. And that whole stadium is clapping along with him. And when he starts running down the runway with the pole, and there's that anticipation, is he going to do it? The crowd was just going nuts.
Yeah.
The whole crowd.
You had to, man. That was – I don't care. Listen, when it comes to the Olympics, yes, I want the U.S. to win. I really do. But I'm all about competition. It's just when it's good competition and someone's going for a world record or an Olympic record, I don't care what country you're in.
Yeah.
It's exciting to see, and I'm rooting for that person because – like, for instance, the Ethiopian crew, I think it was like their 1,500-meter runners. That was the first time they had won a medal. They came second and third or third. And I was excited for that because it's like this country's never won a medal in that particular sport, and they finally won it, just like St. Lucia. she ended up winning a medal for her country. Her country's never won a medal.
Never won a medal.
Exactly.
That's what I love, stories like that, for sure. Right? You get to root for that. Now, the guy from Sweden, his name is Dondo something or other. Mm-hmm. It was not a Swedish-sounding name. He doesn't look Swedish at all. And his buddy, with the American, I don't know if they went to college together or whatever, but they clearly knew each other. The American won the silver, but he knew he couldn't hang with Dondo.
No.
So Dondo sets the record on the third try. It's his last shot. He sets the world record. And he sprinted over to the stands. Did you see what he did?
Yes.
And he just had a huge makeout session
with his girlfriend. He ran up there. Hey,
I don't know. He was sweating, slobbering. He just went right over.
If that's the time to make out, like I would give you an excuse to make out, you can make out.
I mean,
okay,
I guess
you can just
set the record.
You just set the record. You won a gold medal for your country. Man, go ahead. Man, kiss your girlfriend. Go ahead. Do what you do, man.
It wasn't just like a hug.
No.
Congratulations.
He was slobbing her down.
It wasn't just like an attack hug. Just you hug and you're like, oh, we did it. It was just like, we're going to mug it down.
That was a French
they were
plus kiss.
Down.
That's what that was.
It was French kiss. I guess they're embarrassed, you know.
Yeah, you're embarrassed. You might as well. That was a French plus kiss. That's what that was.
And his parents were right over on the other side. They weren't sitting in the same.
No,
so then he sprinted over there and he hugged his parents, but the girlfriend got the priority.
Yeah,
there.
She got the priority.
Holy cow.
You better.
Something.
You better. You better give her the priority.
Oh, boy.
Or you went going home with mama and daddy later.
One of the two.
Exactly.
The kid's name is Armand Duplantis.
Yeah.
Duplantis.
Mondo Duplantis. Yeah, he goes by Mondo.
Mondo.
Yeah. That was quite the
event. That sounds like
quite
a pole vaulting name, Mondo, with a world record of 6 point. What did he jump? 6 point.
It was like 20 feet high.
Yeah, it was 20 feet high. It was like 6.15, something like that in meters.
They just do the meters thing.
Yeah,
come on, feet, please.
Exactly. Just give us feet, man. We ain't trying to do meters. Too much math.
The meters, I still get confused. Like the 1,500 is basically the mile, but like how close is it? Is it a little more than a mile, a little less than a mile?
I think it's
a little more.
I could be wrong. I only passed.
Don't look this way. Willie went to Vanderbilt and he can't answer it, okay?
This is the problem.
And then y'all look at me.
This is the problem.
The hell? Don't look at me. I can come close. I'm probably not going to get the exact measurement. No, don't come into me.
D. Mason,
it's four laps, right?
Right here.
Yeah.
Willie, did you see the Serbia game this morning?
Oh, yeah,
Serbia
I got to do earmuffs.
Yeah,
earmuffs. I got to do because I don't want
to
hear.
Serbia versus Australia, did you see it?
Hoops?
Yes.
No.
La, 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 la. Okay, well, never mind. Y'all both have something to watch today. All right. I'm going
to
keep
you're saying it's you need to tune in.
It's worth. He knows one thing about it. It was a 24-point
yeah,
deficit.
I want to know anything else about it until I watch it. But
okay.
Then I got to do what everybody else does. I just had to put earmuffs, man.
That's the one thing we can't talk about today, so never mind.
Okay.
Oh, okay, I got a quick
Kevin did text in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And in our next segment, we're going to get into some deep dive on Will Levis and the evaluation on his numbers last year. I think you're going to want to hear that. D-Mace is going to interpret and see what we might be able to get in the wide receiver translator. But Kevin texts in and says, D-Mace, LOL, you're showing your age, sir. If anyone is actually taping the Olympics, please have them call in.
You got a point there. You got a point there.
Yep, I got the VHS set this morning, 9 a.m. to 12.
Oh, man.
And then I got to have would you have the VHS tape? You could put a, like, long play?
Yeah.
Or extended plays? So you could get, like, extra hours on
it
the same
tapes
tape.
A little bit
slower.
Yes. You better make sure it's a blank tape, too, because if you tape over your mama's movie, something's wrong. Oh, you're getting big.
It happened a
big
few
trouble.
Times in my life.
I've had that happen.
Oh, yeah.
Tape over something you should not.
There was like a home movie of going to a vacation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then
precious footage.
20 minutes later, it cut to the 1996 NHL All-Star Game. I'm like, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
This is not good.
Family heirlooms.
The first thing I saw was Mike Madonna's face. I'm like, yep, that's not family vacation.
Mm-mm. Okay, I want to say this right quickly. And I know it's not serious. So when I say this, don't think, oh, he's about to say something serious. No. It is election time. We're starting to get this thing ramped up. And I want to ask the phone company. I don't care who you're going to vote for, stop sending me these damn text messages talking about vote for this person and vote for this person. No, I don't want to vote for anybody right now. Don't send it to me. I've, over the last 5 days, I've gotten text messages from both parties like, vote for this, vote for this, vote for this, vote for this. I'm like, no, I'm not worried about that right now. That's not what I'm looking at right now. So stop texting me, please. Okay, it's not going to make me vote no sooner. I'm going to vote when I need to vote. So whoever's sending these out, robo, whatever's, stop texting me, please.
I feel lucky.
I haven't gotten them?
They haven't found me yet.
I started getting them like a week. I think it was about a week ago, a week and a half. They just started coming in. And I'm like, who? I didn't give anybody my number. Like, why are they texting me this crap? Huh. So
I'll have my people text your people.
Please do.
Vote for me, all right?
Please do. Yeah, I'm gonna vote for Nick. Okay. So right, just stop sending me.
Let's quickly get the Bicycle Boy on the Olympics here. Our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bicycle Boy, what's up?
Hey, Will, I'm at the fitness center, but I'm not on the elliptical.
Okay, good, good. Because on the elliptical, that is a bad connotation to Predator fans.
Hey, here's one for you. The strangest competitions I've seen at the Olympics this year might have been this one this morning, and I call it the spider monkey competition. It's these guys, it's a race up like a 40-foot straight-up wall. They're hooked into a harness, and it's like rock climbing, only it's straight up. Have you seen that?
I've seen a couple of clips.
I have not seen it.
But it's not just called rock climbing? It's just called rock climbing.
I haven't seen it.
I don't know if it's rock climbing because it's just a straight up wall and there's little for them to grab on or put things, but it doesn't look like the traditional rock climbing.
Mm-hmm.
But,
wow.
But man, these guys go up that thing in like less than 5 seconds.
Oh, wow.
They're just flying. And they look like spider monkeys going up there.
So it's how fast you can get up there? It's a race? Okay.
Yeah, it's a race. And it's a two-man heat, each one. And I guess they take the fastest time. I'm not exactly sure yet how they score. It was on this morning. And I just thought, wow, they can turn anything into a sport.
Wow. Yeah, they do. I mean, yesterday I was watching, even though it's been a sport forever, I'm sure. I was watching I don't know what they called it, but it was the singles canoe, like rapid. They had to go around these things that I've seen in the Olympics before, but they had to go around these tubes, you know, to get points, and the water's, you know, rushing fast, and it was just, they're turning over quickly, like going underneath water, coming back. They did that a few times. I'm like, man, y'all just make anything a sport. Like, I get it.
It is amazing how they conclude what to add, because they've added so much over the years.
Yeah,
but it is. I'm in. I get sucked in.
I'm all the way
competition.
In.
Competition
when it comes to the Olympics this year,
more so than I've ever been. Mm-hmm. I think. I've watched more. I'm watching every day, at least some. All right. When we come back, we'll switch gears. We'll talk Will Levis, and we've got some numbers from last year. The Aaron Schatz FTN Football Almanac. They did a deep dive on his numbers last year. We're going to get into some regular stats, but also that second level analytical stat, and ask D-Mace what he makes of it. And then we've got a couple of tidbits on the two main wide receivers as well, their skill set. And we'll even include Tyler Boyd to the mix as well. Some really interesting stuff if you want to sort of take a peek into what lies ahead for the Titans and the skill players. Stay tuned. We're just getting cranked here on 102.5 The Game. This is Willie and D-Mace. Ah, yes. Why am I picturing Rodney Dangerfield and the group of people on the golf course and Bushwood dancing to this song? Remember, Rodney Dangerfield's got the big high-tech golf bag, and he's got a radio in there, and he's got all kinds of periscope and who knows what else. And there, he starts jamming out to this song.
Now they're using all that stuff now, but just in different ways.
Yeah. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership with a buzz. Is always about great service. Okay, let's get to Will Levis. I was perusing over the FTN Football Almanac, and this used to be called Football Outsiders Almanac. It's the same set of numbers that I kind of – this is where I am with a lot of analytics. I know I understand some, and it helps me understand the game, but I know I don't understand everything. But I try to work the themes. It's kind of like me in some of the classes I took at Vanderbilt. Like you were saying, like everybody is a mile more than 1,500 meters. And like you're looking at me, I'm not the guy that's going to be raising my hand in the class. And, yeah. A mile is 5,280 feet. So they've got some stuff on Levis that I think would be interesting to bounce off of you guys. So here is the evaluation in a nutshell. That when Levis had protection and time to throw, he did very well. They have a stat in the FTN numbers called DVOA. It's basically value over average. And most sports now have kind of a baseline where zero is league average. And then if you're 5% better, that's good. If you're 10% better, that's great. And on up the line. And if you're in a negative percentage, that's below average. That's not good. So what they did was they said when Levis had protection and time to throw, he did well. But when he was under duress, he did not do well at all. So this is how they summarize it. The difference between Levis, I'm just going to say efficiency because that's their code word for DVOA. That's just the stat that they use. The difference between Levis's efficiency without pressure and his efficiency with pressure was the biggest gap in the entire NFL. So the problem is, in their analysis, was that Levis, the way he plays, invites pressure. He is an old-school, throwback, pocket passer who wants to wait until the last tenth of a second to take his shot. This is all out of the Football Almanac. In that regard, he's kind of shockingly one-for-one casting replacement for prime Ryan Tannehill. Now, let's stop there for a second. Do you see that? Does he remind you of Tannehill? That was the book on Tannehill, that he was going to get sacked more because he was waiting and waiting. He would hold the ball to the last second before he throws. Do you think Levis learned that from Tannehill, or is that what they were being taught? Are you noticing that with Levis? Have you noticed that with Levis?
It could he holds be, the ball? It could be, you know, the – because I remember, you know, Vrabel said this one day. I think it was on a Monday in the scrum or whatnot. And he said, we need to get faster. And he said, I'm not – and I'm paraphrasing here. Not just, you know, quarterback reading, you know, what he sees. The receivers have to get into their routes faster. I think that was a big problem last year. They didn't have the necessary foot speed or quickness to get into their routes fast, and then you have a bad offensive line. So that slows down the process for Will, and he has to hold on to the ball. Or, you know, Ryan Tannehill. Because you got to – if you look at Ryan Tannehill, the year he had A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, and Janu, I guarantee you he got the ball away a little quicker. Because things opened up a lot faster. Last year, they did hold on to the ball extremely too long. And I think part of it was, obviously, the offensive line. Because you know that the offensive line is only going to give you so much time. But you're trying to hold out that extra second or half a second or 2 seconds just to get the ball to the receiver. So, you know, I saw a little bit of that. But I don't think it was necessarily because of him seeing Ryan Tannehill. I think it was a byproduct of the offensive line and the receivers.
That is obviously, I think, where all of our minds go is, okay, well, of course, because they couldn't protect anybody, whether it was Tannehill or Levis. So I guess this goes down to part of the philosophical question of when a quarterback is sacked, how much of it is on the quarterback for just not getting rid of the ball, and how much of it is on the offensive line? Because there are quarterbacks who take more sacks because they hold the ball. other guys, and some of it's the product of the offense, mm-hmm. is they're just going to get rid of the ball. Like they're some Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, they were just going to, the ball was going to be out. It was just going to be really tough to get sacks against guys like that.
But that's because that's what separates guys like, and I thought Peyton Manning was the best at it that I had ever seen. Like to be able to have total control over everything and to get rid of the ball so quickly. Like he would see, it was almost like he saw things before it happened and he knew exactly where he needed to go and he got rid of the ball. And a lot of it was because, I mean, he had a really good offensive line, but because of his mobility, he couldn't move, you know. Even in his early years, he wasn't a runner. So he used his ability to get rid of the ball very quickly as sort of the tool that other guys would use to kind of buy time a little bit, scramble a little bit. No, Peyton's was, I know this offense. I know what you're doing defensively. I know even before I hike the ball, I am going to my second guy, not my first guy.
Right.
So – Will Levis is going to, I think it'll be better this year because I don't think he will feel as panicked. At least that's what I'm hoping because of the offensive line and the revamped receiving core.
And do you think that this offense will be designed to get the ball out?
Yeah, I think it has to be because you're still working with an offensive line that is not proven together. So I think the things you have to do to put Will Levis in a good situation, you got to get rid of the ball quickly. You got to have outlets for everything that you do. He shouldn't be sitting there holding on to the ball, waiting for guys to get open. That's why they went and got a Calvin Ridley, who's a little bit more faster. That's why they drafted a young kid this year, Jackson. And they're hoping that, you know, Traylon really takes that step he needs to take because those guys are quick. And fast, and they get into their routes a lot quicker than, say, a Tyler Boyd or DeAndre Hopkins, guys that are still damn good players, but they've lost a little bit of that foot speed.
So, to review, Levis, without pressure last year, 64% above average, a very good grade. But his efficiency with pressure, minus 107%. That is extremely low. So, zero is average. He is more, that is 64% is good, minus 107% under pressure. And, of course, the problem is he was under pressure a lot.
Mm-hmm. That is horrible. And that's what, that number shouldn't be that low, but you got to sort of give him some slack. He's a rookie. He was a rookie last year. Yep. He was thrown in there in the middle of the season. So he still was learning things on the fly. And he was trying to, I thought he was trying to play hero ball at times because the offensive line was so bad. I think if you see it this year, I think there is a concern. Like, you can't handle pressure. Once a team finds out, you can't. You know who else? You know who else is looking at this, Willie?
Other teams.
31 yeah. teams. They're looking at this exact
and
thing.
It does
thing.
Mention that. That says the defenses are going to have this book now mm-hmm. from the start.
Exactly.
And they're going to say, let's take these numbers.
They're going to say, put pressure.
And specifically on the blitz, mm-hmm. they said he was 35% below average when blitzed, ahead of only these three quarterbacks in the league. Bryce Young, who played on a terrible team.
Yeah.
Tommy DeVito.
Yeah.
Danny's distant cousin, I guess. Remember, he was the guy that everybody loved, yeah. the Giants. We don't like Daniel Jones. Get DeVito in there. Well, DeVito. Tommy DeVito.
Yeah.
And Bailey Zappi, the Flash from Western Kentucky, yeah. the Hilltopper, who was yo-yoing back and forth with Mac Jones mm-hmm. as he was floundering in New England for a bad team. So that's not where you want to be
in
the rankings. So the blitz book, uh-huh. I think, is going to be on Levis until he proves he can improve in that area. So new system, mm-hmm. bunch of new receivers, revamped offensive line. You hope he's in a better position to succeed, but this is where the improvement has to come specifically. Under pressure, can he process and make the right decisions at a better level than he did last year?
And it doesn't, listen, it doesn't, because when you're at zero, based upon this model, zero is average. So you want to be as close to zero or above that. You don't want to be 100 and something, minus 100 or something. It's like, okay, if that is indeed the case, I'm blitzing you just about every time because you can't handle, you don't see where the blitz is coming from. Or if you do see where the blitz is coming from, you don't recognize how we rotating coverage and where we're rotating that coverage to. So if you don't figure it out, we're going to figure it out for you, which means we're going to blitz you until we can't blitz no more. And once you do that, man, it's not good for a quarterback. It really isn't. It's not good for the offense, actually.
Now, they do have hope. Like, they project his numbers for 2024, and I think they believe he can take a jump. And it says in their scouting report, Levis can be, if the two things improve, better decisions under pressure, better decisions processing when the other team blitzes. Mm-hmm. If those two things improve, Levis can be a legitimate NFL starter. If they do not improve, he will tumble into the Kevin Cobb second-round pick waistline.
But they're right. I mean, they're absolutely
Kevin Cobb
right.
had his moments. I think we all know that Will Levis is not going to be a complete bust.
No.
But the question is, you know, how high
is his
ceiling? Where is the ceiling?
It's the roof. That's where the ceiling is. It's the roof, okay?
Let's see if we can get some. If people have some thoughts on this, jump on in on the call or text line, 615-737-1025. We've got a few other tidbits on the statistical profile from last year, Levis's 9 starts, and we'll share those with you as well. Chris is on line one. Chris, welcome into the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. My question is do we have stats of how Levis was under pressure at Kentucky? Obviously, you're comparing college to the NFL, but, you know, in my mind, the SEC puts out probably the best NFL players, so, you know, do we have stats on that? I'll let you guys talk about it.
That's a really good question. Yeah. I'm sure they, when they scouted Will Levis, they looked at that. The numbers, I would have to go back and find them. I don't have those with me. I could try to go back.
But there would be a direct correlation if he dealt with issues from a blitz standpoint in college and he's still dealing with them here. There is a direct correlation. Well, how does he now become? Because again, once the NFL finds out who you are, they're coming after you. And he has to be able to learn how to be comfortable in a blitz setting.
Yes.
And not have happy feet, not be jittery, not predetermine where he's going to throw the ball. He has to get to a place where he feels comfortable and he feels secure with that offensive line. I think if he feels secure with that offensive line, I think he will handle blitzes a lot better.
It's a great question, I think, by Chris, because there are quarterbacks who get better at that. And then if it's a consistent problem going way back to college, maybe even high school, just your brain's ability to process what you're seeing quickly. There are some that argue it's hard to teach that if you don't have that. And that's why they try to come up with these cognitive tests before. Remember the whole thing, that whole scandal last year. I forget what was it called, Nick? The
S2 or S1 test?
Yes, yeah. And supposedly Stroud didn't do very well. It all got out. It leaked out. And Stroud was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have a problem out there. And that looks so dumb now.
Oh, big
looking
time.
Back on that.
He probably didn't feel like taking the test.
Are those like the modern-day Wonderlic test?
That's what it is.
Well, it's supposed to be an improved
version of the Wonderlic
test. More how it translates to actual football, whereas the Wonderlic, it kind of does, but there's some people that don't think it really applies
Wonderlic
that much.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
How many bubbles you have to fill in, D-Mace? Was it a Scantron?
Wonderlic?
Yeah.
I think it was like 50-something questions, if I can remember.
Oh, wow.
It's like, what am I taking, the SAT again? Like the ACT? Good Lord.
All right, when we come back, we'll have more numbers on Will Levis from the Pro Football Almanac. Other things to kind of look for as the system changes, the offensive line changes. What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses of Will Levis in the rookie year? Some in-depth stats that are not just the back of the football card, the standard stats. They go deeper in this, and we're sharing them with you. 615-737-1025. If you have questions about it, we'll talk some fantasy football today at 12:30. And Tim Hasselbeck will join us during the 1 o'clock hour. Titans, slow walkthrough kind of day. They'll crank back up tomorrow. So we'll have a lot of heavy Titan stuff tomorrow and Thursday on the show. As I lose my voice. Stay tuned. Time to go to the break. When we come back, More with Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.
The ceiling is the roof, the roof, it's the roof, it's the roof, 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 roof. I wish you guys nothing but best. The ceiling is the roof. I wish you guys nothing but best. The ceiling is the roof. I wish you guys nothing but best.
Michael Jordan. This is going to be a hit someday. I really... Nick, why have you held this back so long? Like, is this on Casey Kasem's top 40 here? Is this moving up the charts?
I mean, it could
Casey
be.
Casey Kasem.
It could.
I love Casey Kasem. Oh, Casey Saturday, Kasem. Saturday morning, he used to come on. Yeah. Oh, man, I love it.
Top 40 countdown?
Yes, yes.
It's catchy.
And at number one.
Up five notches to number five.
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
And with the... with the number one song, The Ceiling is the Roof.
All right, we're talking,
oh my goodness,
talking about the ceiling for Will Levis and where can he go. If you look at his nine starts last year, it's a decent sample size. We know he's still very young, although he is 25. So you hope that there is quick growth, especially with the new coaching staff. There's a lot riding on this. So, listen, we can talk about the reps in practice, and he's, you know, he was four for five in the drills yesterday, or he completed a nice-looking pass, or he threw a couple interceptions. That's all one thing, but we're trying to look at his strengths and weaknesses based on what the stats showed last year. And so we're referencing Football Almanac 2024 FTN, which is Aaron Schatz's group, used to be called Football Outsiders. So here are a couple other notes. Here's one thing that I think, in my mind, is a huge thing that can improve on, and that is running smart. Do we agree that Levis is a pretty good athlete and can run? Last year, he had just 25 runs for 57 yards, and it's all the context, right? You know, if you only need 1 yard, if you're on the one-yard line, or if it's third and one and you run for one, that's a good run. But he didn't run effectively at all. He was 27% below average as a runner last year.
He
didn't
run
smart.
Yeah, I think a lot of his runs were out of – I don't think we saw anything that maybe one play or two that were designed runs. I think everything was him being pressured out of the pocket and him having to make a decision on whether to run or not based upon that. Because if you look at, you know, 25 carries for – 50-something yards, that means that either it was third and one and he got the 1 yard, or he was running out of duress. So take it for what you were, take it for what it's worth.
And remember all of the discussions in the press conferences when he would get banged up and he took some shots. Remember, you can picture his body like a propeller, you know, a helicopter spinning around in the air after he got hit. He's got the willingness. He's got the competitiveness. He's fiery. He's not afraid to get hit. But there's got to be that running smart that's been pounded into his head. We'll see how many times he's put into a situation to run this year. But there's a running smart that I thought Ryan Tannehill and the greatest of all time, I thought, was Steve McNair, running smart. When am I throwing it away? When do I think I can make it? There's all of these things that go into running smart. Levis doesn't have that yet. But he's fast enough, he's mobile enough to do it if he can learn how to do it.
Yeah, he's a big guy, physical runner.
6'4", 229.
Yeah, sort of in the lines of a, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, Josh Allen type of quarterback, bigger guys, Joe Flacco, bigger guys. But can move, and once they get downhill, it's hard to tackle these big fellas. But that's not a situation you want Will Levis in too many times, because obviously if he is scrambling around and running, that means the offensive line isn't doing their job, and then you open your quarterback up for injuries when he's doing that.
A couple of more numbers I think are noteworthy. They track in FTN not only the actual interceptions – which was four for Will Levis. You know, not too bad. Nine starts, four interceptions, not bad. But they also track what they call interception-worthy throws.
Oh, he had some of those.
Throws that are like, oh, boy, that could have been picked. Maybe the guy drops it. Maybe you're thinking, boy, that ball was up in the air for a long time. He's lucky. So they have their methods of doing that. And the way they track it, they say for every interception you throw 2.3 other passes that are interception worthy. So you're going to throw some. Everybody's got some. Yeah. Everybody throws interception worthy throws. But his is, instead of 2.3 to 1, mm-hmm. his is 4 to 1, which is too high. So they say he had 16 interception-worthy throws last year in the 9 games. So there's another inexperienced thing that you hope he will cut down in his first full year as the starter. These are all things to shoot for. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that uncommon for a rookie quarterback to have interception-worthy throws, which is why in the whole, if he throws a pick in practice, let's not freak out, because you do have to kind of understand what you can get away with. And practice, you might as well do that. And then in the game, you have a better sense of, should I try to throw this ball or should I just take the sack?
Well, yeah, you don't want any. It's better. I guess it's better to have, you know, the stats say if you start a whole season, you end up on average throwing 23 to 25 touchdowns. And against 10 interceptions, somewhere around 10 to 12 interceptions. Okay, if you're going to have those interceptions, I would rather have the interception-worthy throws rather than the interceptions. You see what I'm saying? Because they don't – I think a lot of passes, when they look at it, they're not describing it or saying, well, that ball had to be thrown. Like, some situations the ball had to be thrown. They may have been interception-worthy throws, but they were throws he had to throw. Like, on 4th-and-1, we had to get the ball out. Or we're in the red zone, and I have to throw it in there at the end, you know, at the end of the game to try to get a score. So I'm sure there were moments like that, but they don't sort of put an asterisk by it and say, well, it was 4th-and-1, and he was trying to throw the ball. You know?
Right. I think they do their best to try to put all these numbers in the context, but I'm sure there are special situations like that. Mm. And this is what goes into quarterbacking. Another related one is adjusted sack rate. This is, again, with a nightmare offensive line in front of him. The number of times he's being pressured. So his sack rate, 9.7%, that ranked 29th. That's very low among the qualified quarterbacks. So sometimes you're in a choice of, do I just chuck it and throw an interception-worthy throw, or do I just eat it and take the sack? So his sack rate is high. His interception-worthy throws also high. A lot of this is because he was under duress. When he had time, this is the biggest positive out of all these numbers, he was effective. The last thing is accuracy. They have a stat that says completion percentage over expected. They grade every throw. And they say, what would the average quarterback's completion percentage be on these throws? You put all that together, you come up with a number. Brock Purdy, if 0 is the average, he completed 5.6% better than average. That was the number one guy in the league with that. The last place guy, our buddy, Billy Zappi, minus 6%. So Will Levis was minus 2.2%. So his overall completion percentage, 58.4%. The grade, if he was average, he should complete around 60% or more of his passes. So that stands to reason, right? His accuracy needs to get a little better.
Yeah.
And all of it comes back to, if you can put a support system around him, those numbers should improve.
Yeah, it's once you improve the offensive line, and I think that is the biggest one, then you get a better sense of who he is as a quarterback. You like some of the things that he does when he's not pressured, but you know that's not a perfect world. That's not going to happen. You're going to get pressure in the NFL. But if they solidify that offensive line, which it seems like they're doing, they believe in their mind, based upon, I'm sure they looked at these numbers too, and I'm thinking their thinking is, if we solidify this line, then those things that are negative, they'll start to creep into positive. His efficiency will go up, and the turnovers will go down. So they're banking on this offensive line. I think that's why they're so high on Will Levis.
In a year, it'll be interesting to go back to these numbers and see if how much he advances. In a lot of ways, there's nowhere to go but up. It's not like he was bad. But the central question is, how much of it is him holding the ball, not accurate, all of these things, and how much was just the chaos going on around him. We know it's a combination of both, but how will it look in a year? Probably the biggest question, more so than wins and losses or anything, that the Titans are trying to answer this year is what do they have in him? So we're trying to set some boundaries here, some markers, and when we'll kind of look at this as the season unfolds. All right, when we come back, hour number two, we'll talk some fantasy football at the bottom of the hour. We'll go around the NFL, hit D-Mace with a couple of wide receiver translator questions. When we come back for hour number two here on 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.